Like, you...
Wait, what did you think he was saying?
How the fuck does he think these boats run?
No, that's the tip he's giving you. Don't pay the ferryman. Don't even fix the price. Don't pay the ferryman till he gets you to the other side. That's how it runs, Dan. When I'm on the other side, then you get me money, mate.
I used to... We're recording now, by the way. I got all that. Not on purpose, but we just happened to be recording, so... Hopefully the bird won't be after us.
Yeah, well, no, you can't use it anyway, because the reason that's in my head, it was on Tommy and Hector's podcast. We can't be copying the only other Irish podcast now.
Okay, well then, you know, we just start. Is that podcast any good?
It's the most amazing podcast in the world since the dawn of time. Yes.
So anyway, just as a means of politeness, this is this week's episode of the Spot Me Podcast. My name is Daniel Hannon.
My name is Niall McCann. I might be slightly high energy. I don't know why.
That's okay. No, I need that because I've been I was up early this morning, even though I'm not working, so I'm a bit ragged. So if you could be the high energy guy, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think I just it's not like I just came from work. It's not like it was an amazing day at work. It's not like I closed a $1 million deal. Well, we've certainly closed that $1 million deal, sir. No, it was another day at work.
Have you ever closed a $1 million deal?
No, I've never closed a deal.
Have you ever thwarted a $1 million deal?
Probably. probably accident. I remember a moment when they used to try and get me to sell. I couldn't sell. I can't sell. There's a knack to selling, I think. I have no ability to sell.
I can't do it either. I think I was out of that company whose name I just bleeped because just in case.
Bleep it when I say it. That's go back, Dan, and bleep it when I say it.
Stop everything.
Immediately go back now.
No, I'll bleep it. Don't worry. But I also worked for that company and I was gone just before we had to be salesmen.
Yeah, I started just as we had to be salesmen. And I was no good at it. I was no good at it. I was no good at it. I didn't enjoy my time in the company.
If you're in a position where you have to sell something, you're usually selling something you wouldn't buy yourself. And you're just like, no, it's really, this will make your life so much better. This thing we sell, it's hard to talk about it when you can't say the name of the company, but it's always something where you're like, not in a million years would I sign up for this.
They give you things to sell, and like selling sort of tech to little old ladies who really didn't want it. Plus, it was an inbound call center I was at. So if you were calling up, something had gone wrong, right?
Yeah.
So you would call in and fix me fucking service you provide, sir. And I would be like, certainly we're looking at getting that fixed. How would you like to buy something off me in the meantime? Fucking no! Fix it!
How would you like more of the thing that's making your life difficult?
Yeah, listen, some lads could do it. Some lads could do it. I had no knack for it. It's a weird mentality selling, I think.
Well, I was good in the record shop. In more than one occasion, I sold something directly off the turntable. Put something on and someone was like, what is that? And explain it to them and they were like, well, I'll take that. So literally have to lift the thing off the turntable, put it in a bag and give it to them.
That's because there's a certain kind of people going to music shops. Anybody who goes into a music shop is looking for the kind of shit you're playing. Here's some Guided by Voices, sir. Well, here's some Nick Lowe. He never got his due. Didn't he? Okay.
I'd say he's a very wealthy man.
But he was a writer. He was more a writer, wasn't he? Well, I think he ended up more a writer.
Well, he wrote What's So Funny About Peace, Love and Understanding, didn't he?
What's so funny about peace, love and understanding?
He did a song, I think it's called The Beast Within or something like that, that Johnny Cash did. And when Marc Maron had him, Nick Lowe on WTF.
It was Nick Lowe on WTF?
He's a very, very charming man, Nick Lowe. But he was asking him, like, you know, there must have been some... Marc Maron was like, oh, there must have been some real darkness in that song. And Nick Lowe was like, no, I just made it up.
The beast in me is caged by frail and fragile bars, restless by day and by night, rants and rages at the stars. God help the beast in me.
Cruel to be kind, that was him. That's a cool tune, isn't it?
You gotta be cruel to be kind in the right measure.
And I knew the bride when she used to rock and roll, which is which is actually pure country and Irish. To be honest,
actually, yeah, Big Tom should be singing that.
Exactly, Mike Denver. I knew the brain when she used to rock and roll.
I remember Johnny Graham, comedian Johnny Graham, who is back on stages, I believe. So if you see his name anywhere near you, check him out. He told me one time that he saw an interview on television. There was some big country singer was doing an interview in Offaly, which is where Johnny's from. But they were interviewing him outside like a spa or something. He was wearing a huge cowboy hat. And it kept setting off the automatic doors behind him when he's been interviewed. So if he took any kind of move back, the doors behind him to the spa were opening automatically. Like, you know, so he was saying it happened 5 or 6 times in the space of a really short interview.
I wouldn't have minded, but we were talking to him on the main road.
One of those hats made out of like nachos or whatever, like, you know.
Neve was telling me during the week that the man from the Mavericks is married to somebody. Significant. Not that anybody's insignificant, but the man from the Maverick is married to somebody who would make you go, really? He's married to her? You know, you know who I'm talking about.
I know the Mavericks, yeah. I don't know who the guy is married to, though. But the Mavericks bent my head when I was about 15 because we were doing, when there used to be a studio on Bridge Street in Dundalk, a recording studio behind the Wiseman's Pub. Derek Turner, who books the gigs in the Spirit Store now, had a studio behind there, and that's where all the young bands recorded. And he bent my brain one day because that kid, this radio was on in the studio at lunchtime or whatever, and Dance the Night Away came on. Just wanna dance the night away. And he said to me, like, if you listen to that, it's only 2 chords. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, if you listen to it, there's only 2 chords. It's the same 2 chords for the whole song. And he was saying it's a really good example of what you can actually do with 2 chords, because if you listen to it, there's lots of different sections to that song. There's the, here comes my happiness again. And then there's the, if you should see her, please tell her not. You know, like there's lots of different sections, different melodies going over the same chords. Like, and just since then, like, what was that? Like fucking well over 20 years ago. Like, you know, it's just that song has always stuck in my head as an example of what you can do. What's their song? Something, something and Cadillacs. Guitars and Cadillacs. Ding, 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 ding.
Hillbilly music. Was that them?
Yeah, that was them as
guitars,
well.
Guitars,
yeah.
Cadillacs. I think that's the song was playing in Terminator 2 when Arnie arrived in the present.
Yep, that's there exactly it. Yeah.
Guitars, Cadillacs, hillbilly music. They were Hell's Angels, though.
That's right, yeah. They'd be more into, like, metal, surely. But then when he steps outside with the jacket on, it goes, that song that was in hundreds of films. From the day I was born, I was bad to the bone. That song was in so many films. Old blokes in leather jackets. That's it. But what was the one where they kind of resurrected the likes of Stallone and Bruce Willis and all that a few years ago? What were those films called?
The Expendables.
Expendables. I have to imagine that in at least one Expendables film they used that song. Bad to the bone.
I never watched a single one of them. Was there 2 of them? 3?
I think there's a few.
Yeah, not for me.
What use have I maybe they're brilliant. Such a thing? No, they're not. Come on now.
I didn't watch those guys the first time.
I liked Arnie. When I was younger, I liked Arnie, definitely.
Yeah, but he's not in that film because of Kindergarten Cop. He's in that film because of Red Heat and all the rest.
Oh, yeah, but they're the ones I really liked Commando.
Yeah, no, not for me. Not for me. It was just not my thinking. Like,
it's very funny, Commando.
I'm sure it is. He's a fine comic actor. Kindergarten Cop. Nobody talks about it. And Twins. Do you remember Twins?
Yeah, Twins is good. Twins kind of gets forgotten a little bit. Now, maybe it's not. Maybe it's another Pacific Heights, and if I was to go back to it, I wouldn't enjoy it. Like, you know, but I did like even just the concept is funny.
Yeah. It's Arnie and Danny DeVito, and they're twins. But I have an awful soft spot for Danny DeVito. I love Danny DeVito. He's great. I love that he is always sunny. I love that he's kind of on a sort of really edgy, cool comedy now. At this end of his career, I love him. I think he's brilliant. Very versatile.
I always love Taxi. Taxi's a great show. Taxi kind of gets forgotten when people talk about sitcoms.
I always say better than Cheers. People go, well, Cheers was the... Well, no, it fucking wasn't. Taxi was there before Cheers.
I preferred
brilliant.
Taxi, yeah. And I preferred Judd Hirsch and what's-her-face. What's the woman with the red hair in Taxi?
Mary Lou Henner.
I preferred those two over Ted Danson and the woman with the blonde hair in Cheers. Shelley. Yeah.
She had one big hit, the one with Gabriel Byrne in it.
Wasn't Peggy Sue Got Married, was it?
No, that was... Peggy Sue Got Married was... who was in Peggy Sue Got Married?
I think she was in it, but I don't know what it was about. I just know the name.
No. It was like Sissy Spacek or something, wasn't it?
Probably, yeah.
I confuse, because they're not very similar films, so this sounds ridiculous, but I don't know. It must have been... I must have seen them around the same time or something, like 25 years ago. I confuse... Desperately Seeking Susan and Peggy Sue Got Married.
Desperately Seeking Susan is the one with Madonna, right?
Yes. Back when she was doing films.
I've never seen it.
Oh, I have it on DVD here somewhere.
Really?
Which means I will never see it again because...
Do you even have a DVD player? Like,
no, I have an old Xbox, but it's too much fucking trouble.
To watch a film, you have to find the control panel, like in the whatever it's called, the...
I could just say to my phone, play me a film.
I spent an awful lot of money on DVDs. And then anyone who's out there who has DVDs, right? Don't do the stupid thing I did and put them in a wallet. One of those big fucking DVD wallets. Keep them in their cases because you can sell them on eBay or you can leave them in the charity shop. When you have them in wallets, you can't do anything with them. You just transport them from one house to the other until you finally do what I do. You give up and you empty them and you literally put... caseless DVDs into the bin in a plastic bag because it's just what else are you going to do with them, like, you know.
I should throw these out. There's a big pile behind me, but that's a lot of money.
I know, yeah, but everything's a lot of money. Like, if you were to get the money back and all the food you've ever eaten, it'd be a lot of money too. Like, money is to go somewhere. Like,
I don't eat very high quality food, man.
But you know what I mean, like, your money is, if it sits in your bank, they'll decide what to do with it for you. Like, you know, you won't actually get to use it yourself. That I don't really think of it like that. They say, oh, well, look at all the money you spent on that. And it's like, yeah, but I mean, at least I didn't spend it on, I don't know. You have to spend money to stay alive. I could have spent it on anything. Like, you know, I can't claim any of that back.
I should have spent it on drugs.
Yeah. Well, at least I'd have some stories and not just like I had to throw out my DVDs. But anyway, this is the Spot Me podcast, Niall. What you and I do, Niall, is at sort of fortnightly intervals, we swap pop cultural artifacts, films,
you do that.
Albums, TV shows, that kind of thing, and we get back and talk about them. So last week we did Pacific Heights, and that was a grand old trip down memory lane, even though the film itself was...
I enjoyed chatting about it.
Yeah, it was great. I think of the episodes we've done in this new run, I think it was probably the best one. You know, it was good fun talking about it.
Don't jinx it.
Okay, well, I can delete that out. That's okay.
No, don't do that. That's definitely jinxing it.
So for this week, I got you to watch Jerry Seinfeld's comedy special on Netflix, 23 Hours to Kill.
You and I know each other on a certain level for many, many years. You know for a fact. I could be anywhere in the world right now. Now you be honest. If you were me... will you be up here hacking out another one of these? Do all things we do to convince ourselves our lives don't suck? And I know that because I know that everyone's life sucks. Your life sucks. My life sucks too. Perhaps not quite as much. Never feel bad that your life sucks. The greatest lesson you can learn in life, sucks and great are pretty close. You go to a baseball game, you have a hot dog. The hot dog is cold. The bun is not toasted. The vendor is an ex-con in a work release program. You love that hot dog every time. Does it suck? Yes. Is it great? Yes. That's how close they are. I say to you that sucks and great are the exact same thing. You have an ice cream cone, you're walking down the street, the ice cream falls off the top of the cone, hits the pavement, sucks. What do you say? Great.
One thing I did notice when watching it back is that he's lost all control of his actual voice, his speaking voice. Do you notice that?
No, he hasn't lost control. He hasn't lost control. There was one point where he turned around and said, well, listen, thank you very much. It was just in the middle of things. And it was, well, listen, thank you very much. You're a fantastic audience. I really enjoy doing this for you. And they, of course, went, rah. And he just went over and took a drink of water and came back. That's stagecraft. That's a man who just knows how to behave on stage. I need a drink of water. I'll say something that'll keep them busy for 10 seconds and I'll have my drink of water.
There's really good footage on YouTube. The Beatles went on tour to Japan and they'd been playing in America and Europe and the UK to screaming fans, to the point where there was so much screaming they couldn't hear what they were playing. They get to Japan and they do a gig and it's shocking. They're really out of musical shape altogether. Their harmonies are really ragged and all over the place. And what George Harrison starts doing, you know the song Paperback Writer?
Paperback Writer.
And you know that the harmonies come in the background. Paperback Writer. And there's no instruments behind it for that little bit. It's just naked. Like, so the first time they did it, for the first verse, the harmonies were fucking awful. So when it got to the next verse, when it broke down for them to do the same harmony bit again, George Harrison just waved at the audience and they all started screaming and no one could hear how bad the harmonies were in that bit. And then they would just go back into the song. Jerry Seinfeld, like, love him or hate him, he's a master of that kind of thing. He's so polished.
When did people start hating him? I really like Jerry Seinfeld.
He rubs people up the wrong way. He rubs me up the wrong way sometimes. Like, Jerry Seinfeld's stand-up is probably my least favorite part of the whole Seinfeld thing, the whole sitcom thing. The thing I love about the sitcom is the stories and Larry David's brain when it comes to coming up with those stories and those situations. But anything Jerry Seinfeld puts out, I'm going to watch because I love the sitcom. So I'm going to watch it. And it really took me by surprise. I was properly laughing at it. And in a way that I hadn't laughed at other specials that came out that year of comedians that I would have thought of as maybe my favorite comedians. I laughed way more.
Such as?
Patton Oswalt had one out around the same time that I didn't laugh at that much. And then the last Netflix special, not the YouTube thing that he did after George Floyd got shot, but the last Netflix special that Dave Chappelle did, I thought was just okay. I didn't think it was that good. Like, you know, there's a lot of trans stuff in it that was like, Jesus, didn't we do this the last time, David? Like,
well, you see, he was attacked for that the last time.
There was him and the Bill Burr, the last Bill Burr special that came out, even though there was good stuff in it, a lot of it was fucking old man yells at cloud, carry on, like, you know. Whereas I wasn't expecting to like the Jerry Seinfeld special, but I genuinely laughed at most of it. Like, and if you laugh at it, then you can't really intellectualize that and think, well, you know, this and that. I laughed. So ergo, it was good. It made me laugh. The Bill Burr special didn't really make me laugh. The Chappelle one didn't really make me laugh. This is making me laugh. Ergo, it's a good special.
But that's because he has a way of doing things. Like, there's not an awful lot of personality in Jerry Seinfeld's stuff. Even his references are kind of like TV of the 60s in America.
It's because that's the last time he was a normal human being and not like a brand. You know what I mean?
Why? He hasn't been a brand.
He's a rich old man. And I'll tell you what, it's happening to Noel Gallagher as well. I usually look forward to Noel Gallagher's press cycles when new things come out because he does a shit ton of radio and stuff. And I watch all of it on YouTube. I'm like, oh, great. There's fucking hours of fucking Noel Gallagher interviews now. But he's just like, he's this anti-vaxxer. He's like calling people snowflakes. It's like, is this Noel Gallagher or is it Donald Trump? What am I listening to? Like, you know, and I think these guys just get so fucking insanely rich and in their own bubble that they don't have everyday references anymore. They're just kind of these lunatics, you know? And I think Jerry's way wealthier than Noel Gallagher. Like, you know, I'm sure Jerry lives exclusively in a bubble of people who tell him he's amazing and don't say, you know, maybe socks aren't the most important thing to be talking about right now or whatever. Like, you know,
that's all he's ever talked about. That is his brand. He talks about everyday, ordinary, nonsense things that nobody really gives a fuck about, but he can make really funny.
But I think they did it in the TV show in a way that was kind of edgy, whereas in his own stand-up, he's not edgy at all, really. I think that's the difference. People got used to TV Jerry, and then when they would go and see him, they're like, oh yeah, he does just talk about fucking socks or, you know, cornflakes or whatever.
Here's the thing. I don't want to, because we have beaten the fucking, this horse is a skeleton horse at this stage, but I don't think Seinfeld was edgy. I don't understand. And it maddens me when I hear people talk like that. I'm like, no, it wasn't. It's a purely standard TV. It wasn't.
As a mainstream US sitcom in 1989, I think it probably was.
Why?
Because everything else was really, really poor apart from Cheers and a couple of other things. Like, you know, that was the era of like Different Strokes and all this kind of garbage. Like, you know,
No, I don't know. Why does that make it edgy? There's a difference between being edgy and being good.
I don't know. At the end of an episode about... Look, I know that this is what the example I brought up, and you proved rightly to me that the Powerage had done it in the 70s. But for an American sitcom to do a whole episode about a masturbation competition is pretty big. And then to do one about... how Elaine is complaining that Jerry never gave her an orgasm, and they decide, well then let's go to bed so I can do it, and he fails again.
Why, do you have a fake?
Of course.
Really?
You fake?
On occasion.
And the guy never knows?
Yeah.
How can he not know that?
Because I was good.
I guess after that many beers, he's probably a little groggy anyway.
You didn't know.
What's that?
You didn't know.
Are you saying?
I think I'll have a piece of cake. With me?
Well.
You faked with me?
Yeah.
You faked with me?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
You faked it?
I faked it.
That whole thing, the whole production, it was all an act.
Not bad, huh?
What about the breathing, the panting, the moaning, the screaming?
Fake, 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 fake.
I'm stunned. I'm shocked.
100%. I don't really have that much to say about this. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was pure, pure Seinfeld. If you have ever seen any Seinfeld, you'll know what to expect. It's Seinfeld. It's quality product. It's very, very funny. And I really enjoyed it.
I don't know why I got onto the tip of saying that he's not connected to the real world there 10 minutes ago when I was talking about it at length.
He is offensively wealthy. I'll grant you he's offensive, but it's also not his fault.
I think I was reacting to when you mentioned that his references are all old. I think that's what I was getting at. That's why it's because he's a rich bloke and they stop caring about modern things after a while because... They can just fill their house with all the things they liked when they were younger because they can afford it. They can go and get someone to find them all on eBay. They don't have to worry about modern culture.
Jerry Seinfeld does not have a house full of fucking F Troop and Get Smart memorabilia.
Have you not seen those interviews he did on Jimmy Fallon and all that from his house? And he literally had a Get Smart album in the background.
Really?
Yeah, he literally had Get Smart memorabilia behind him in the interview.
Okay, well, shut my mouth then. But I suspect if he does have it, they're tastefully framed on the wall. This is not a man who has... I know he has like a Superman statue. I bet that's one. Like, I don't want shit in my house. Like, I don't want any of that shit in my house. I want a grown-up house. I want the house of a grown-up.
Like, it's all right to have Superman books, but...
Yeah. And in my toilet, I have a Metropolis... picture. It's like the kind of thing if you went to New York City, you'd take home as a sort of tourist, a memorabilia sort of a New York tour. But this is a Metropolis one with Superman.
That's fair enough.
It's small, it's tasteful.
And it's in the toilet. But I know what you're saying. Yeah, I wouldn't want to have one of those houses that's got like action figures and stuff around the place. It's just like, no, yeah, I want to have a grown-up house.
Can't be with it.
Now, I do obviously have a lot of CDs and this kind of stuff, like, you know, when...
Yeah, the detritus of my previous life is very much... It's washing up on the shore of the current moment.
You could take those to the fucking charity shop, though, man. It'd be very easy to get rid of them.
This is the thing. I don't have any animus for the things themselves. I don't want to give away, especially my comics.
Oh, no. Well, comics are different. Comics are... Like, a comic isn't obsolete. You can pick it up and open it, and you're reading it. Like, whereas a DVD, you have to have the thing to plug into the other thing to watch it. Like, you know... Like, a book's a book. Unless you're the kind of person that's embarrassed having comic books around the place, there's no reason to get rid of them. Because they're self-contained. They do the thing that they do. They don't have a USB cable that you have to plug into something else, like, you know. So, whereas DVDs in and of themselves are just bits of plastic. They're of no use to anybody, like, you know.
So then, you see, so that would be my argument. My argument is that nothing Jerry Seinfeld was really saying in that thing that I watched. This is the 23 Hours to Kill special, by the way, just in case we hadn't stated.
Filmed in 2019, I think they put it out. I think it came out during pandemic because I think I was
just
watching it.
Just got in under the wire then.
Yeah, and it's at the Beacon Theatre. In previous years, Dylan does a Christmas gig at the Beacon Theatre every year. It's always been kind of a dream to go and see him December, New York City, go and see Dylan. He does like a week's worth of gigs there every December. Well, obviously not last December, but fuck, I'd love to go and see him there. It'd be amazing. I actually, for someone who we've just been talking about as being disconnected and all that, I found his I found his material about marriage fairly on point.
The female brain is one of the most competent and capable organs in all of the biological universe. Girl power. You're goddamn right. There's nothing the female brain cannot do. It will solve all problems of Earth and life. Having completed that, it will move on to the hypothetical. Theoretical situations that may or may not occur. The female needs to know how you might respond. If you faked your own death and I found out about it, what would you say then? What are we talking about now? Oh, I dreamt the whole thing last night, so don't deny it. Being married is like being on a game show and you're always in the lightning round. I went out and bought a game show podium. I set it up in my living room. I wake up in the morning. I stand behind the podium, try and answer all my wife's questions and get on with the goddamn day. I got a hand button.
I was surprised he got away with it, I have to say.
What do you mean got away with it?
Well, it's very much, it's old style. Look, let me tell you about my wife. Like, you know, it's like pre-Rodney Dangerfield talking about his wife. Like, it's real sort of, might as well have been mother-in-law jokes.
Rodney Dangerfield's jokes, though, are clearly not, they're clearly not anything that happened to him. You know, like, there's something about those Rodney Dangerfield jokes where you're just like, look, these are great jokes, he's a great comedian, but you can't picture any of the shit in his jokes that actually happening.
You know, the other day my wife called me up, she said, come over, there's nobody home. So I went over, there was nobody home.
Hey, my father was a workaholic. Every time he thought about work, he got drunk. No, I thought he's a good turn of phrase, you know, he's just like...
He does, he's amazing.
You talk about me with your girlfriend, you have a girlfriend, that's wiffle ball, my friend. You're out there playing paintball. I'm out in Afghanistan with live rounds. I just think I think his word choices are very good. I think his stuff is well crafted. He's kind of the Paul McCartney of stand up. It's very similar. Mm. He's very workmanlike. He's very polished. He's not like, and here's another one off the new album or whatever. Like, you know, you can tell he's been doing this. I read somewhere that his set, like his hour, he said he replaces about 10% of his hour every year. So every year he loses 10% of it and gains a new 10%. So he says he's got like a 10-year churning of material going through the show. The era of the Louis C.K. style comedian who were like, all right, now I did my hour. Now that's gone. Now I'm going to do a whole new hour next year or whatever. That kind of thing. That's not his style. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, it takes too long to get this shit right. So every year he'll have like maybe a new 15 minutes and he'll take 15 minutes out of one, the current block he has, and move in the new 15 minutes. So every 10 years, it's a whole new set.
So how does a televised special like this work with that?
Because he doesn't do that many of these. He's only done two or three. He did one very early in his career, pre-Seinfeld. He did one just after Seinfeld called I'm Telling You for the Last Time, where he did all his stuff and said, this is the last time I'm going to do it. And it's actually got one of the best things about it is the title sequence where he has a funeral for all his material and it's all other comedians at the funeral. And Gary Shandling they're all going past the coffin, which is just full of like notebooks and stuff, like, you know, and Gary Shandling tries to reach in and take a piece of paper and Jerry catches him. And Gary Shandling's just like, I just need something about the post office, Jerry. I'm sorry. And Jerry's like, okay, go on. Yeah. But and then that was like a complete retiring of everything he'd ever written. And then he started again from scratch. And that's what that other documentary is about, that comedian. You know that when he's back in the little clubs doing it again. And it's actually...
With Arnie. Whatever happened to him?
I don't know. I assume he's still doing stand-up. He was in the TV version of Teen Wolf, the series.
I assume he's dead.
I don't know. I'd say he's still in front of a microphone somewhere. He's probably has a podcast.
He did have post office material.
He did. Yeah, he did. That's one of the things he could say that could date the thing a little bit. Yeah, he's talking about the postman. We say, why don't we just raise the price of stamps to a buck and then take that extra money and go get yourself some real pants and some pants and a real car?
Terry Pratchett wrote a great book about the post office called Going Postal. That was really great.
I have never read a Terry Pratchett book.
They had invented the clacks because all of his Discworld books is set in a kind of a faux medieval kind of world, like a Lord of the Ringsy sort of thing. But they'd invented the clacks, which was semaphore towers, you know, that.
Oh, right.
The way of the arms and the code gets sent on to the next tower, which gets sent on to the next tower, which they were a real thing. They used them in the Napoleonic Wars to get word to London from Portsmouth, which was the head of the Admiralty, the British Navy. But the plaques are privately run, and the post office is run by the city in this book. And it's interesting. It has some interesting stuff to say, because it is different. The fact that it's privately, these other companies are privately run, is very different, makes them very, very different.
Like, he was very prolific, Terry Pratchett, right? Wasn't he? It was kind of, he had a book a year kind of guy, wasn't he?
He was one of them lads, yeah. Coming up to Christmas, new Terry Pratchett's out.
Every other year, I'd say, when it came up to Christmas, there'd be a Billy Connolly video out. I remember that was like every Christmas around my Uncle Pat's house, whatever Billy Connolly video was out that year, we would all watch it.
Poor old Billy. He was great. I loved Billy. Me and Cam used to sit watching Billy Connolly of a Saturday night or a Friday night in the house back in Mary Street North. Just had shitloads. Every one of those DVDs eventually made its way. We just used to sit. That used to be quick.
You can watch them again as well. Like, you know, it's just like, yeah, I could. There's some of them now I could recite, really. Like, you know, I've seen them that many times.
Oh, we did it. You come in from the pub, put on Billy Connolly. That was kind of the wee ritual. Yeah. The wee ritual. That was it.
Potatoes of the night.
But you could do that with Jerry Seinfeld.
I've done it with the show. I've rinsed the show. Like, you know, this maybe the first three or four seasons of it, I've probably seen it 10 or 11 times. Like, you know.
How could you handle that edginess? It must have been intense, Dan.
Oh, I stand by it.
Yeah, the whole world stands by it, and the whole world's full of fucking shite.
The whole world. You always have to be tilting at windmills, don't you? The whole world.
That, unless it's a windmill, I have no interest. I don't know. I remember talking, funny enough, I was talking to Niamh yesterday, and I was talking about a time I was at a row in a pub with a lad who announced to the world, because that was the kind of him. Actually, not I don't you. Know. I didn't know the guy. I didn't know the guy. I still don't know the guy. I never met the guy again. But he announced to the world in the pub that he hated Steven Spielberg. It was so fucking stupid. It was so fucking such low shite. And everybody else seemed to be water off a duck's back.
I wouldn't be the biggest fan myself, but what were his... I don't hate him. In no universe do I hate Steven Spielberg films, but I don't like them as much as other people do. I don't like E.T.
Fuck off. What can you possibly be wrong with E.T.?
I don't know. It just showed it to me as a kid. Like, I saw it when I was a kid, and I was like, this big turd. He's a really annoying voice. Like, he looks fake. Like, you know, I just didn't like it very much.
He didn't look fake. It was E.T.
Well, he looked less fake than the CGI version, yeah. Did you ever see any of that? The weird CGI E.T.? It's just like, why the fuck did you do that? Like, it looks weird.
But I don't know. But in this pub, I made my opinion. I made my opinion of his opinion quite well known. And she was like, why did you have to pick that hill to die on?
It's like defending fucking Coca-Cola or something. Like, you know, there's enough people out there defending Steven Spielberg. Like, you know, there's no point in falling out with people over it. Like, you know.
There's a certain kind of person who attacks him. And it's just, nah. But she was like, why? Why the hill that hill to die on? And it suddenly occurred to me, and I was sort of thinking, why that hill to die on? Then I realized, I wasn't going to die on that hill. I don't know that I've ever encountered a hill I would be prepared to die on. It would have to be a pretty amazing hill for me to be prepared to die on it. But I was like, there was no chance of me dying on it. I was obviously right. It was like, it wasn't like, why did you pick that hill to die on? It was like, why did you pick that child to slap? It's like, what was going to come back on me? What was going to, this fucking dickhead who had no idea what he was talking about?
I watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind recently. I didn't enjoy that either.
Oh man, you are. And dead I actually thought, inside,
like, fucking Richard Dreyfuss, you dickhead. Doesn't he go away with the aliens at the end? You're just like, you are a prick. You've ignored your family for this whole film, arsing about with mass spuds, like, you know, when your family needed you. And then at the end, you're like, all right, there's aliens. I'm gone. You lot can sort yourselves out, like, you know, but I'm away to whatever planet they're going to. I don't know if I can even exist in the atmosphere, but I'm going. And load of bollocks.
Poochie went back to his home planet. He was from another planet? I guess.
I don't like Jaws. Jaws, I didn't like. I thought that...
Dan, what stupid, the fuck that is stupid wrong with
narrative
you?
Device of that mayor who's just like, it's not a shark. These people's legs are just falling off and floating away.
What is wrong with Jaws? I don't understand. I don't understand the constituency of someone who claims to be a human being and is not moved by Steven Spielberg films.
They're too big. Too big.
They're not big at all.
Big and simple.
Well, you see, now here's the thing. I don't believe they are simple. In fact, I kind of know
Seinfeld's
they're
not edgy. Spielberg's not simple. Making no sense at all.
I had this fucking thing. I was talking to somebody last week. I said that the Holy Grail was better than Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
No. No, The Last Crusade, excuse me.
It was better
than Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Well, I mean, I'm not an Indiana Jones guy, but the one I remember the most fondly is The Last Crusade.
Well, I tell you why. Because in Raiders of the Lost Ark, he just has to go and get the Ark. Now, there is nothing wrong with Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's almost a perfect film. It's a brilliant film. But he has to do basically everything he did in the first one over again in Last Crusade. But this time, it's all entwined with his relationship with his father, so that the quest for the Grail is actually the quest for that relationship with his father to heal that rupture that has been haunting him since childhood. It's just an added emotional layer across the top, and it's interwoven. Absolute Jeff's kiss, as Kevin Smith would say.
Do people not think well of the second one?
No, everybody hates the second one, but the second one is fine. It's great. It's just not as good as the other two, but it's brilliant.
But there's four, isn't there? Isn't there Indiana Jones and the fucking old man?
I never heard of such thing. To my knowledge, that's
isn't
not true.
Is that the Crystal Skull or something it's called?
No.
Oh, right, no, I see.
I don't think that ever happened, really.
They're making another one.
No, I don't think they are, actually. I think you must have imagined that.
Oh, man.
I don't know, maybe the next one will be brilliant, but the Crystal Skull was not good. It had that cunt in it that I can't stand him. I don't like him.
Who?
Shia LaBeouf. You know, it's probably not his fault, but there's just something about him I would just be like, no.
He was in a film, wasn't he in a film last year or the year before that Kermode really liked? He wrote and directed it. Was it something to do with Honey? Honey Boy or something like that?
Winnie the Pooh?
Yeah, he was Piglet.
I don't know, I can't he just grates on me. I've only ever seen him
in fucking Transformers, and like when I worked in the group home in America, I saw the first 5 or 10 minutes of all of them about 60 times, but I've never actually seen the full films, because you'd be putting residents to bed and you put a film on for them, and there was one of the residents, I'd always stick on one of the Transformers films for him, because I'd be like, yeah, you'll get to see like Megan Fox in like denim shorts or whatever. That'll do you for the rest of the night. Like, you know,
whatever happened to her? Did she cross him? Wasn't there something like that? Well, didn't she cross Michael Bay or something?
I don't know. Cause she's in Funny People. That's the last, she was in the Diablo Cody film where she played like a vampire or a zombie or something. Is it Jennifer's Body?
Oh yeah. That's a while back.
Yeah. And she's in Funny People. And I can't think of anything since. Not Funny People, This Is 40. She's in that awful... Have you ever seen This Is 40? It's like, oh no, will Paul Rudd's record label fold? Oh, the tension.
That's quite important.
No, it's not. If your business
is failing at 40...
He was living in the middle. You should have seen the size of this fucker's house in this film in the middle of LA. Like, you know, I'm sure he was fine. There's no way his little independent record label was paying for this fucking house. It was such a stupid film.
Okay, fair play. But yeah, she was a strikingly good looking woman, Megan Fox.
Yeah.
But then so was, what's her name? I saw her in Dublin Airport.
I don't know, who did you see in Dublin Airport? What's she in?
She was in The Other Guys. She was in Training Day. Oh my God. Why can I not think of her name?
I've never seen either of those films. I think I saw a few minutes of The Other Guys, but I didn't stay with it.
Did you not like it?
The thing with Will Ferrell and... Who's the other actor in that? Will Ferrell and... The guy with the high voice, Mark Wahlberg.
Does he have a high voice?
I've got muscles, you know. Yeah, he does. Doesn't he get up at fucking 3:30 in the morning to work out or something? Did you see he published his sort of schedule, his daily schedule? And it's insane. The poor bastard's in bed by 7 o'clock or something like.
Did you ever watch Entourage?
Yeah, I did actually. I watched all of it. I saw the whole whatever amount of seasons it was. Like, I think I watched it all in like a week or something. Like, it was one of those kind of weeks, like, you know. But probably was more. But yeah, I remember kind of liking it at the start and very quickly being like, I don't think this is fucking going anywhere. This is not good.
People are very down on it these days. But Eva Mendes is who I was thinking of, by the way.
Oh, right. You saw her in Dublin Airport.
Well, I saw somebody in Dublin Airport going into Dublin Airport, and I was like, Jesus Christ, she is the spit of Eva Mendes, that woman.
Did she look wealthy?
I don't know. She looked Latin, Dan. She looked Latin. She looked exotic. She looked very gorgeous.
She's in. But go ahead.
No, go on, go on.
I was just going to say, she's in Larry David's film. Have you ever seen, is it called Clear History? Have you ever seen it?
I thought she had sort of taken time off to raise the kids.
Oh, this is a good few years ago now. It's maybe 6 or 7 years ago. Michael Keaton's in it as well.
Maybe she got married. I know that Eva Mendes sort of took a step back for a while she was raising the kids. Like, I always had a problem with those two being together because I thought that was an unfeasibly good-looking couple, her and Ryan Gosling. Like, it offended me that would happen. Like, I just remember thinking, God, their kids will just be
superhuman.
Yeah, they'll just be like golden children. We just might as well make them kings of the world now, like those kids from Narnia did.
Either that, or they won't have to struggle for anything, and they will not. There'll be no threat to anybody whatsoever because they've got no capabilities.
Rob Lowe has like a TV show with his sons. Look, if they were anybody else's sons, you'd probably just go, oh yeah, they're just blokes. Yeah, they're all right. They're all right. But then you hear that somebody goes to you, that's Rob Lowe's son. And you go, that's Rob Lowe's son?
Oh, do you know who I think that about all the time? Do you ever see Paul McCartney's son, James McCartney? He's the definition. The word bloke would conjure up an image of this bloke. He's a little bit heavier than Paul, and he's got red hair, but I've seen clips of him on YouTube being interviewed, and he seemingly has no personality at all, like, you know. And he's a musician, he's a singer-songwriter, like, you know. Straight off the bat, you're like no, do anything else in the world but this. It's only a few people have ever gotten away with this, with what you're trying to do here. Jacob Dylan has made a good fist of it, but Jacob Dylan, is probably more charismatic than his dad, like, in terms of being able to ingratiate interviewers and stuff like that.
He was pretty charismatic.
Yeah, but I think Jacob can play the game a little bit better. And he's like a sort of a, I don't know, like, he seems like a sort of a taller, better looking version than his dad. Like, you know, and I think he's kind of been able to play the fame game a little bit better. Like, he doesn't have to fucking pretend he's from the 1930s, like, and do albums of Frank Sinatra songs just to throw people off the scent. Like, you know, he's been able to stay a fairly fucking normal human being, like, you know. Whereas Paul McCartney's son is just like, oh, no. You're not just following in the family business. Your dad invented the fucking business, like, you know. You're not, this isn't going to work out well for you.
James McCartney looks like if you were watching Rocket Man or Bohemian Rhapsody, he looks like the kind of fella who would sign them to their first record contract
and then get ripped off.
Steal all their money while he plies them with cocaine. That is who that man is.
I've never heard any of his music, but I've seen him being interviewed, and he's just like, yeah. Someone asked him what his favorite album was on some interview, and I swear to God, he just went, Abbey Road. Just like named one of his dad's albums, like, as his favorite album of all time, and shrugged when he said it, as if to say, yeah, this is pretty inevitable. And I have no personality, so I'll just pick that. You know, so it's just like, the poor man, like, he's just, I don't know, like, that they're crazy steps to follow in, like, you know. That's why you have to hand it to Jacob Dylan. He has made a really, really good job of following Bob Dylan.
It's hard to have a go-to personality. Like, not everybody has a gift for seeing where the world is wrong and the inclination to stand on the hill and roar it at the world, which is my understanding of the concept of personality. fucking Seinfeld's not injured.
So going back
again,
to
Raiders isn't great. Raiders is great, by the way. That wasn't my argument.
I mean, if you're into it, it's great, I suppose. Like, you know, but I just never.
You fucking prick.
I just never gave a fuck. Is it Harrison Ford in a hat, like Rock rolling after him, whatever? Like, you know.
Jerry Seinfeld made a film with Steven Spielberg.
Did you ever hear Jerry Seinfeld talk about it? He said, I worked in that film for 3 years and we wrote and we did voice acting. We did retakes, rewrites, blah, blah, blah. And the first time I stood in the back with an audience watching it and felt that first tepid laugh, I just said to myself, not worth it at all. Completely not worth it. He's written and directed a film. He's doing a film about the man who invented Pop-Tarts. And he's going to do it for Netflix, like a comedy film.
He had that thing. He had an extended piece on Pop-Tarts in that special.
In comedy, what you do is you think of something that you think is funny, and then you go from there. It's a fun thing to say, Pop-Tart. I like the first line to be funny right away. When I was a kid and they invented the Pop-Tart, the back of my head blew right off. And that got the whole thing started, that a specific part of my head blew off, not just my head, but just the back. In the midst of that dark and hopeless moment, the Pop-Tart suddenly appeared in the supermarket, and we just stared at it like an alien spacecraft, and we were like chimps in the dirt playing with sticks. What makes that joke is you got chimps, dirt, playing, and sticks. In 7 words, 4 of them are funny. Chimps are funny.
Have you ever had a Pop-Tart?
I think I had an untoasted one in someone's house one time. It had purple stuff in it. It wasn't very nice.
It says purple in it. Purple is a fruit.
My parents wouldn't have stood for that much. They weren't big on those kind of super sugary cereals. Although Frosties were okay for some reason, which are just sugar. Just they're shaped like cornflakes, they're fine.
I've never had a Pop-Tart. And I don't feel like I ever will. Although there's a toaster sitting there. I could fucking get a Pop-Tart. If I wanted a Pop-Tart, I could get a Pop-Tart.
It's probably
some
Tesco brand. Toast treats or something, like, you know.
I never had them because, like you say, it wouldn't have, like, Mom would not have considered that breakfast, like, so it would just, there would be no point in getting them. Like, one time I was in the States, it was in Florida. We went on a holiday, like a 10-day thing. And coming home, we got stuck in a queue behind two fucking fools who had taken all of the clothes that they brought on their holiday, wore them, and filled their suitcases up with Pop-Tarts.
You can get them in Ireland.
Apparently there are flavors that you can't get. You can't get all the flavors.
God. Jesus fucking.
So they got this. So they had nothing but a suitcase full of American flavors of Pop-Tarts.
Freedom flavor.
Yeah. Customs saw this and naturally went, nobody's taking two full large suitcases with nothing but Pop-Tarts in it. This is obviously some kind of scamola. But I'd say they thought there was fucking, a donkey's worth of cocaine in there somewhere if they just took a wee poke about. But it held up the whole fucking queue, and we were standing and we were outside, and it was Florida in the fucking summer.
And they're wearing all the clothes they had in their suitcase in Florida.
Yes. These pair of absolute fucking dickheads. And then you wonder why people think what they think of the Irish.
They would have died on the flight from fucking heat exhaustion or some shit. Like, you know, they would have just been puddles on chairs.
And then the word came back, the queue, like people were going, Pop-Tarts, they have two fucking suitcases full of Pop-Tarts. And they go, oh my God. And the person behind you go, what was happening? And I'm like, Pop-Tarts, apparently they just have a suitcase full of Pop-Tarts. And the word went back, the queue, why we were standing in that stifling, wet, humid Florida heat.
The Pop-Tarts probably toasted in the packets with the heat.
Oh my God. Just dickheads. Just, I will now, those pair, I just wanted to shake them because you knew the type of them. Like,
I will say, the Americans do cereal better than anyone. I can see why someone like Jerry Seinfeld would be obsessed with cereal. They do it, they do like Chex. I remember when I lived in the States, Chex were, they're like, a bit like Shreddies, but they're like made from the same stuff they make Rice Krispies from. Rice, I suppose. But it's the way it was prepped.
Whatever. Magical concoction. It's the milk of a virgin's tits. Whatever they use. It's extraordinary.
That's extraordinary.
Oh, God. They're what? They're shredded wheat but made from rice?
Yeah, yeah. So it's they're like pressed Rice Krispies in the shape of shredded wheat. And the same, there's corn chex, rice chex, and wheat chex. And if I could order them over at a reasonable price, I would. And they have that mac and cheese that you can't get over here. The sort of convenience mac and cheese with the wee sachet, you know, that you just heat up in milk and stir it into pasta. It's garbage, but it's great garbage.
You can get Tesco in Dundalk have a shelf of American foods now.
Do they?
One wee shelf out the back, yeah. It's got, like, I don't know, what would you get? Different kinds of Reese's.
The Reese is kind of a one-trick pony, really, isn't it? It's just the chocolate with the peanut butter inside.
Yeah, what shape can we make this chocolate to pour the peanut butter into? We'll make the peanut butter into the shape of a horse and we'll pour chocolate over it. And we'll call it Reese's Peanut Butter Horse Chocolate. Yeah, it's all the same shit. But they just have stuff like that, you know, stuff, American stuff that you can't. It's disgraceful how expensive it is.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they have to import it. What were we trying to import? There was a mix for buckwheat pancakes we used to really like that you just can't get over here. And we looked into importing it. And yeah, it was like 50 quid for a box or something. It's just like, no, that's outlandish. You'll just make do with the pancakes I make, said I.
His bet on that Pop-Tart was very, very funny. It's a breakfast food in the same shape as the box and with the exact same nutritional value.
That's the box. That is a good bit. And I like this bit about, and it only, I watched it, I think what might happen was I watched this shortly, I became a dad, and he had the dad material in here. He was saying that and it's true, when a baby is born, a woman changes. She becomes this sort of earth mother, and all this shit kicks in that we don't understand, and you're just a dickhead standing there. Yeah, there's been a whole mystical change in your partner, and you're just standing there going, "I'm still exactly the same. I'm still holding in a fart. I'm still, you know, even though that'd be a good point to let it out because there's so much else going on that no one's really going to be paying attention."
I'll blame this one on the kid.
Yeah, and it's just like I'm still like part of me is still thinking like, what's slowly walking down a hall faster than a cannonball? What does that even mean? Like, part of me still thinking that the man doesn't change at all. You walk in an idiot and you leave an idiot, but now with responsibilities, like, you know. And but the woman, like, the changes the cat went through since the baby was born has been insane. And I'm not any different at all. I think I might even be wearing the same clothes I was wearing the day he was born, like, you know. And then he does that thing about his kids. The kids see him around the house and they, you know, like my daughter came up to me the other day and said, "Is somebody helping you?" You do kind of feel like that. I know I'm only Riley's only still very young, but you do kind of feel like that a little bit, like, you know.
Tommy Tiernan had a good bit about, they were talking on the Tommy and Hector podcast about a while back now, about what they wanted to have done with them when they die. And Tommy Tiernan, being Tommy Tiernan, decided he would just do what the elephant's doing. As soon as I feel it coming on, I'm going to hop the fence at the back of the house and walk away into the wilderness. And will you not tell anybody? I won't tell anybody. But now that I'm thinking of it, I wonder how long it... I don't know how long it'll take for them to miss me, actually. It's just 2 weeks. Where's that? He was around, I think. Oh, I love that podcast. Everybody should listen to that podcast. It's a brilliant podcast.
But I watched that with Kat, and we both laughed at that bit where he's like, at some point in an argument, the woman will always imitate the man's voice. Like, oh, well, that's what I say. That's what I always say. And he's just like, who is this guy?
When did you all see him? Yes. Yeah.
It's really funny. It really made me laugh. I can't say it didn't. Like, it really made me laugh, you know?
I'll tell you why it made you laugh. It was an extremely polished, brilliantly observed little piece of comedy, which is Jerry Seinfeld's stock and trade, and he does it brilliant, maybe better than anybody, and I think he's brilliant for it.
And you said you did nothing to say for it. That's been in like an hour and a bit, or, you know, maybe it's a little bit shorter.
Has it?
Yeah, it's about an hour and 16
minutes.
Holy shit,
yeah. But, okay, we should be wrapping things up.
To wrap it up fairly soon. Is there anything else you have in mind to mention about Jay-Z?
Yeah, you know, I've nothing more to say. I really enjoyed it. I totally recommend it.
I thought I was going to hate it. I thought it was going to be a lot of shite about socks. And I was at a time in my life when Jerry Seinfeld kind of annoyed me a bit. And I've turned the corner. He's kind of someone I like again. So
people are just so jealous of him. He hit the jackpot. He couldn't have planned it. Why begrudge the man? I wouldn't begrudge the man. I like him.
Do you have anything we could do next week?
Can you watch a documentary on Netflix for the next one?
Yeah, I'll sort it. I don't have Netflix, but I might be able to.
Oh, you don't have Netflix? I'll give you my login.
I can get my sister's login either. I'll be able to watch it.
I don't offhand. I don't know my password, but I'll be able to find it out because I just stay logged in. That's probably the same password I use for everything. So I'm not announcing it here.
So if you send it to me, I can just log into your bank. You're kidding.
They say you shouldn't do that, but I remain to be convinced.
Well, if you can't trust the podcast partner that you haven't actually been in the same room with in about 24 months, then who can you trust?
Oh God, I need to be getting there. But I want you to watch Voyeur.
Okay.
It's called Voyeur. It's a documentary about a journalist writing a story on a creepy hotel where the owner used to watch people in the rooms.
Okay. That sounds good. Is it creepy?
It's fascinating. Probably is a bit creepy, yeah. Okay. But it's fascinating.
I will be able to watch that. So Voyeur on Netflix for next week if anyone's watching along and wants to get the jump on us.
Sing along with Swap Meet.
So that's it. We've put Jerry Seinfeld to bed now. Why am I in bed? So we've done that. And that's great. So thanks very much everyone for listening. I think the downloads have been fairly healthy, so someone's listening.
Oh, that's good.
So I hope you're all getting something out of this, and Niall, I will talk to you again in a couple of weeks about Voyeur.
Sounds good, everyone.
Have a good
bye-bye.
I'm just gonna say have a good night. It's night time here, whatever time of day it is, enjoy it.